you know, had a lot of games with the Ravens through the years, and you know, if they're being in the NFC West, it's definitely a team that's a lot of familiar faces. Really playing well. Obviously played great against Miami. They're really strong in all three phases of the game. Outstanding on defense, very explosive on offense, well balanced, and always good in a kicking game. So it's been a big challenge for us this week. A lot to prepare for, and good players, good scheme, well coached. It's a good organization, so it should be a good opportunity for us to really take the extra time to try to tighten up as many things as we can, and you know, be at our very best Monday night. That's what we'll need.
Bill, you face good defenses every week, but are there some that stand out, and are the Ravens one of those teams? And if they are, what stands out about them defensively, especially?
Well, they're very good against the run. They're very good on third down, and they don't give up a lot of points. So they get you in a lot of long yardage situations. They convert on third down. It's hard to score. They don't give up many big plays. So it's pretty simple, really. You know, if you have to drive it and you can't convert on third down, and you don't get big plays, then it's hard to score. That's what they've done a good job of.
They beat themselves at all?
Rarely. Yeah, they don't turn the ball over. Don't give up big plays. Play good in the kicking game.
Bill, Eric Weddle's a player you guys saw a couple years ago in San Diego. I'm just wondering if he's doing some of the same things now as he was then, and maybe how you've seen him impact this Ravens team this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's fit into the Ravens defense with Webb and Weddle as the safety combination. They have a lot of speed and range back there. You know, Webb came in as a corner, so he has some coverage skill. Weddle's, you know, somewhere in that range to safety to corner. Skill-wise, he plays safety, but he has some skills. They're both very good at playing the ball on the deep part of the field. They don't give up many deep balls. Those guys have good range, good anticipation. Weddle does a lot of different things for him. He plays near the line of scrimmage. He plays back. He covers in man-to-man situations. He's obviously a good zone player, so he does gives him a lot of versatility.
Bill, they've had some turnover. They have a new coordinator on offense, a lot of new skill position players. Since you played them in 2014, how different does the offense look since you last saw them?
Well, I mean, I'd say it goes back to Morningwig. I mean, we've seen Marty through the years, the West Coast offense, a lot of the things that are his principles. I'd say there's a lot of that in place with the team. So when you look at Marty, who was with the Jets, so we played twice a year. When you look at Marty and you look at the Ravens and kind of merge the two personnel-wise, scheme-wise, quarterback's the same. So, you know, Pitta, Steve Smith, Yanda, Zutaw, I mean, they got a lot of the same guys. There's definitely some turnover. I mean, I'm not saying that like there is on every team, but I think when you merge those together, you kind of see what it is.
Bill, Pitta is having a big, big year for them. I think he leads them in receptions. Is that a result, a product of the West Coast, or is it just Flacco, from what you see on film, just Flacco looking for him?
I mean, both. He's a very productive receiver, always has been. They spread the ball around on offense, like a lot of West Coast teams do. They play their players in a lot of different positions. You could get different combinations of X to slot to outside receiver, and they use multiple tight ends. But you know, Pitt is definitely a go-to guy in the passing game. Got to do a good job on him. But the other players are explosive too. You know, Perryman, Wallace, Smith, Aiken, and they all show up.
What are some of the things that have made Steve Smith so productive for so long?
He's fast, he's quick, he's good with the ball in his hands. You know, he was a returner earlier in his career. Strong for his size. very competitive. Does a lot of things well.
I know it's tough to measure maybe intangibles, but they strike me pretty consistently as one of those teams that's really mentally tough.
No question.
Where does that come from? Is that coaching? Is that the roster? Is that the team makeup, the general manager? What's the process?
Yeah, sure, they're all a part of it. I imagine you probably wouldn't last very long there if you weren't. So, yeah, that, probably it's a combination of all those things. From the owner to the general manager to the head coach to their team leaders, right on down the line. Tough, competitive group every week.
Bill, when you bring in a player like Kyle Van Noy midway through the season, pretty much midway through the season, how long does it typically take for you to be able to tell that this player might be able to be a full-time player for us or a major contributor on offense or defense?
Well, I don't know. That's a tough question. Each player is different. It just sometimes those players are forced in. I would say kind of before you would want to put them in or before they're really ready, based on need, injuries, whatever. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes it takes guys a little while to really get a grasp of it, and then they can take it and run with it. Some guys get it right away and maybe kind of never really rise much above that. Some guys get it right away and they take it and run with it. Some guys, you know, have trouble getting it, or it's just not a clean fit for whatever reason. So I think each player is different. I don't know. And each situation is a little bit different. So when you bring a guy in the season, it's a lot different than drafting a player or signing a player in free agency. Because at this point, or a few weeks ago, whatever point it was, you bring a guy into your team, you have a very specific, you know, your team's already formed. Everybody has a certain number of roles, and they're, I would say, identified. And then you bring a player in and you project him into a certain role or competing for a certain role. It's a lot more specific. It's different than at the beginning of the year or at the beginning of training camp when kind of everybody's out there doing everything and seeing how it all unfolds. This is much more specific. So, and even if you were to claim a player, you had a, you know, if you had a couple injuries or something and you signed a player to come in at that position, again, it would be very specific. Here's what this player would be doing at this position. This would be his role. This is what we got to try to get him ready for this week or in the next couple weeks. It's just different. So it's just different than the other process where you're starting kind of from square one. You're a little bit on an even playing field and everybody going at roughly the same pace with sort of the same opportunity. This is much more specific.
Kyle, when did you kind of start to see that you would be able to be a big contributor on defense?
I mean, he started off well. I think he started off well right away. He came in and, you know, learned things and picked things up. Again, with a player like Kyle, it's a little bit, the part of it is just getting to know him, getting to work with him, getting to know what he, things he does well, things that he picks up on quickly, things that are instinctive to him, and maybe things that he hasn't done before. Particularly with a player like Kyle, who played primarily at the end of the line in college, then played a lot off the line at Detroit, didn't rush very much at Detroit, and then we saw him in a little bit of a different role here. So not unlike McClellan, who played on the line, then played off the line in Chicago, and then has played on the line and now a little bit off the line for us. But again, he's been here longer. It's been a little bit, you know, of a process. So guys like that that are, you know, on the line to off the line players, it's part of it. So you have them here. We're not even 100% sure where the guy's going to play. We had that with Ayers a couple of years ago. Going back, Rosie Colvin was like that. He was an off-the-line player for the Bears, and he was an on-the-line player for us. So you know, with guys like that, you kind of, you can see why he doesn't fit in maybe with another situation. You project him a little bit differently in your situation, but you don't know exactly how that's going to go either. And some of it's trial and error and learning and getting a feel for him and him getting a feel for what we do. And maybe that's something he can relate to, and maybe it's something that's new that he has to get more experience with. So it's, you know, I think the assistant coaches, like Brian Flores in this case, you know, a lot of that really falls to the position coach to teach the player the basics of what we're doing. We can't get into everything because some of it we're just too far down the road on, but the basics that he needs to know, get into those, work with the player, get feedback from the player, practice them, see how he acclimates to the things he's been asked to do, how well he can do them on the practice field, then maybe how that carries over into the game. Same thing with our special teams coach with Joe and Bubba. What positions has he played? Where do we need him to play? How is all that going? And those are the guys that really are the, you know, the hands-on that spend a lot of time with those players that really give good feedback as to, I think, not saying a year from now, but for right now, I think now this guy is this, or I think this guy is more of that, or, you know, we wanted to do these two things. I think he's going to be able to do this one really well. I'm not sure about this other one. It's going to take a little more time, whatever it happens to be.
Go back to Chris's question earlier about mental toughness and the Ravens. Have you ever targeted a player off-season for the intangible of toughness that they can bring here on top of the obvious skill or ability that they bring?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, look, if you want a tough team, you get tough players. If you want a fast team, you get fast players. If you want a big team, you get big players. If you want quick team, you get quick players. And it's hard to get all those. You know, those guys are going to top five picks of the draft. You know, after that, you decide what you want. If you want tall, long guys, then you go with them. If you want tough guys, maybe they're not tall and long, but they're tough. If you want fast guys, you go with fast guys. Maybe they're not tough, but they're fast. Maybe they're not tall, but they're fast. You know, you get what you want. So that's sure. There's guys that have those different qualities, and that's what you're looking for. That's what you want. Then there's probably somebody out there that would have that quality, and maybe not one of the other ones that you want. Maybe somebody else is looking for a different quality. They're all important, but you got to prioritize somewhere. If you can't get everything, then you prioritize based on what you feel is most important to your team.
I assume Rodney falls into that category of somebody you target, not just for his skill, but what he brought in terms of mental toughness.
Yeah, I mean, Rodney had, I mean, you're talking about a Pro Bowl player, so he was fast, he could cover, he could tackle, he was tough, he was instinctive. Yeah, I mean, so you check a lot of boxes with him. I think, you know, it's, I'd say those are the fairly easy ones. The harder ones are the ones where this guy's got this box, the next guy's got that box, the next guy's got another box. You know, when you get that player, you're going to be saying, well, he doesn't do this, but he does do that. So you take him for what he can do, not for what he can't do. If you want to focus on what he can't do, then you probably shouldn't take that player. You should take another player who checks the box that you want checked.
I'm just curious, just to follow up on Mike's, you know, fast and big and long and quick are all measurable. How do you measure toughness?
Toughness, intelligence, work ethic. I mean, you know, those things aren't, you don't get that out of a vertical jump. So, you know, whatever characteristics you want, you put whichever ones in there, you know, dependability. I mean, you whatever adjectives you want. That's,
is that important, like, to rely on your references, people that you know who've been with them, whether it be at the college level or coaches, would you?
I mean, if you can count on that, yeah. It's not, I mean, with all due respect to the colleges, it's different. So, I mean, a guy could be one thing in college. I don't think that ensures that he's going to be that at this level. In fact, I'd say that's not necessarily a predictor. Might be, might not be. But, yeah, I mean, you can put whatever criteria you want in evaluating players. Their physical criteria, their, you know, other criteria, intangibles, or whatever characteristic you want to call them. And when you're picking a team, picking a player, so at some point, there's going to be a pool of players there that are going to be, I would say, relatively equal in value, some with certain attributes and others with other attributes. And which ones do you value most, or which ones are more important to your system, or which ones do you think are can maybe be improved that are weaknesses but possibly could not be weaknesses over a period of time that you could change? I mean, you know, all those are factors.
Probably should ask, is it just strictly durability and physical, or is it mental being able to deal with?
Yeah, it's all those. There's a lot of different types of toughness. You know, going over the middle and catching a ball when somebody's, you know, getting ready to hit you hard, that's one kind of toughness. You know, lined up against a guy who's big and strong a few inches away is a different kind of toughness. Taking on guys that are bigger than you in run force and linemen and things like that, I mean, it's another kind of toughness. Or receivers cracking on ends and linebackers and safety. You know, I mean, there's different kinds of toughness. And there's mental toughness. You know, kickers is a non-contact position, but there's a lot of mental toughness in those specialist positions, snappers, holders, kickers. There's an element of physical toughness, but there's definitely an element of mental toughness that's different than a guard's toughness. You know, so, yeah, they're different. I think you have to recognize that. You know, there's some guys that are tough in a certain way. Maybe they're not tough in another way, but, you know, maybe a guy won't go in and crack block, or a receiver won't go in and crack block. So you could kind of say, well, he doesn't have that element of toughness, but he'll go and catch the ball and, you know, get somersaulted on the hit and hang on to it. I mean, that's another kind of toughness, you know. So there's different. Some guys can play through a lot of pain and a lot of injury. Maybe they're not the most physical players. Other guys are very physical players, but maybe they don't deal with, you know, bumps and bruises as well. So it's, you know, we're all different. We all have different strengths and weaknesses, and you know, I don't think there's any one right or wrong answer. There's some kind of mosaic that encompasses all that.
When a player comes in on the fly, and you mentioned that there are just some things that they can't pick up or learn or whatever, you know, with the understanding that the experience in the system going back to April, May is invaluable. Is there an example of something that a guy like, you know, Van Noy, not asking to go put anything tangible on him, but just a guy coming in that situation just can't learn, that you can't teach them because they are so far behind, like you said?
Did I do a bad job asking that?
Yeah, no, I think it's, I mean, again, there's degree of difficulty on different things. There's some, I would say, relatively low levels of degree of difficulty, and then there are some that get, you know, higher and more complicated. So, you know, communication that involves multiple people in a very quick recognition, you might try to avoid that. Maybe a receiver that motions into a bunch look where you have three receivers together. You know, maybe in training camp you've practiced this with your guys and you have a couple different ways to play it. And then when the pattern unfolds, then we match it this way. If we're in this call, we match it that way. If we're in a different call. But you don't have the time to rep all those looks. You don't have the time to go through all the problem. Like, it's good if they do this, but it's not good if they do that. And then how do we handle those variations and so forth? So, you know, rather than deal with a situation like that, maybe you just say, okay, here's what we're going to do. It's you two guys are going to combo these two guys, and that's it. Or we're going to lock it. We're not comboing anybody. Like, you have your guy, and, you know, we can't get picked, but that's how we're going to play it. You know, rather than having, you know, multiple, maybe two ways of playing something that if you had an experienced team, guys that have been doing that all year, you might not think twice about making that adjustment. Or blitz pickup instead of, you know, we're 3 for 4, but it could be this guy could have 2 or that guy could have 2, depending on the what gap the defender's in or how it unfolds. Maybe if we're 3 for 4, maybe we just go 3 for 3 and we throw hot off the fourth guy. And, you know, normally we could pick up 3 for 4, but It's just too many looks, too many things, too much communication, too, it's just hard, then we'll just go 3 for 3, and if the fourth guy blitzes, then we'll run a route that the quarterback can throw into before he gets there, and we don't have him picked up. So, you know, things like that. I would say you try to figure out what you can do, what you can't do. Sometimes, let's say, you know, a lot of times where the problems come is you're playing a team and you think, well, this is what we're going to get, and we can handle this, but then unexpectedly in the game, you get something a little bit different than that, and then you haven't really gone over it or you haven't prepared them, and then, you know, it's not really the player's fault because you haven't covered it. It's not really your fault because you don't want to sit there and cover 50 things that aren't going to happen in case they happen. That's really just confusing. Sometimes they just get you on it, and you pay the consequence of that play. So that's – but, then you know, those are the things you deal with. So making those kind of decisions and those kind of adjustments. You can make it ultra simple, and everybody knows what to do. Can you handle it when they start calling plays that – make that style of defense or offense tough, and then you run into other problems. So it's, you know, that's a decision you got to make.
Hey, Bill, can I go off book for 1 second? You spent your life around a lot of Navy people. Any added significance to the 75th anniversary of Pearl Harbor today?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big one. You know, Tim Gray's done a lot of work with World War II, and, you know, with the, I know he's in Hawaii now. Pretty big day in our history, certainly in naval history. For me, the lesson on Pearl Harbor, and for us as a team and individually, I would say, is, you know, not what happened on Pearl Harbor, you know, not what happened on December 7th, although that was a lesson there, but the response, what the response was from our nation, from our military, from our civilians, from our population to, you know, battle the world on two fronts and win both of them. And, you know, I mean, what this country did, you know, under Roosevelt's leadership, as well as the multiple military leaders, you know, to go fight in Europe and then go fight in, you know, in Southeast Asia and Japan in response to what happened on December 7, 1941 is pretty impressive. And I remember my dad talking a lot about that, and, you know, when it happened, when he found out, then when he went into the Navy and went to Great Lakes and then eventually went to Europe and eventually went to Okinawa. It was, you know, it's a tough time for this country, but it was a great example of the patriotism of our citizens, men, women, fighting together, pulling together, and being victorious in a lot of different ways. So it's, special day, one we hope we don't have to see again. Tough day for the Navy, though, but they responded, they bounced back, and then the Battle of Midway, that was really a huge turning point. That had that not gone the way it did, I don't know, probably been a longer fight. Okay, great, thank you. Thanks, Alan. Yeah, appreciate it.